need a voice in your mind that is kind, that is loving, and that is telling you every step of the way that they are proud of you. You know, to hear a voice in your own mind that says, I am proud of you. There's nothing more empowering or magical than that.
I love the way you put through in the VIP thing again, although you don't care about it. I'm
definitely not going to sing there, am I? I have no chance.
I see what you are doing, a lot of nodding. How does that resonate with you, what Fiona's talking about?
Well, I just wanted to ask this fabulous audience two questions.
Sure.
So just to back up what Fiona is saying, can I ask everybody in the audience to raise their hand if they go to bed at night, lie there going, yeah, didn't call that person, shouted at my kids, didn't finish that, didn't unload the dishwasher, I hate my partner. Gets into bed at night, pulls the duvet up, snuggles down and goes, well done me, I'm a fucking legend.
There's about two lines on the back. There's always another line. There's two at the back. One is from Cork.
What about you, Andrea? What do you do when you go to bed?
I don't know. I'm asking the questions. When you need your own podcast, you can invite me. So, Siobhan, tell us about that then. So we've seen about a third of the audience raise their hands on the first question, and about two people that just had too much to drink.
Every single one of us will get into bed tonight and have got through today, no matter what has happened, no matter what we've had to deal with, no matter what we haven't done, what we have done, no matter who we've called, who we haven't called, whether we've unloaded the dishwasher or not, we have all got through today. And that's bloody amazing.
Yeah. Woo-hoo! And we're never going to get it all done anyway. I think that's such a relief.
Yeah.
Like, just to know, there's no point actually even trying to get everything done, because what does that even mean? You will go to your deathbed with a to-do list. So, like, that's fine.
But as a foreigner, and as the only foreigner on the stage, is it an Irish thing as well, though? That, you know, you don't like to really go, I'm actually pretty good at something. Oh, what is it? I'm only asking the question.
Yes, yeah. I think I'm writing a book called The Self-Love Habit is one that probably, like, it doesn't come easily, let's say. It's not something, you know, it was always seen as a bad thing.
Yeah.
It was seen as something wrong with you if you loved yourself.
Too big for your boots.
Yeah. You'd eat yourself, you're a bar of chocolate, you know, it's a negative, you're too big for your boots. A lot of shame around it, really. And just how many problems that has actually caused. You know, when you look at the consequences of that, it's detrimental. So, you know, if loving ourselves means a better world for everyone, then bring it on. It's the most selfless thing that we can do. It really, really is. And that's, it doesn't, we don't, it just sounds selfish, but it is completely the opposite.
Thanks. So we have a green room upstairs. I always say that because I love, we have a green
it's
room.
It's just the ego here has gone through the roof.
So we go to a green room before the show. But we were talking about this, and I was saying, you know, I'm going to ask you a couple of questions about your business. And about your business. And they're both super busy. So if you want to work with either Fiona or Siobhan, you have to book, and there's a waiting list of a number of months, which is fantastic to hear. Great for business. However, is also worry the fact that how come you have so much business? So with that breaking,
because we're really, really good.
I know.
I'm
reading the book about it. However, without breaking the professional confidentiality, who comes to you? Who are you? Who's your client? Who's the client base? Give me an idea. What's the kind of the person that seeks your help? Both of you, Steph, Siobhan.
I think for me, it's sort of a mixture. I would have people working in the corporate world, in legal, medical, a lot of tech industry. And that's on my one-to-one clients. I would also have middle management. You know, I have men, I have women at the moment. I probably have more men in my one-to-one client base than female, and that could change in 6 months. You know, kind of it ebbs and flows. There was a time where I wouldn't have any men as one-to-one clients. It was all female, and I think that's kind of changed. That, you know, I'm starting to see more and more men taking that first step, which is the biggest step, is to ask for help, regardless of who, whether it's with Fiona or me or the next person. You know, it's not about who it's with, it's that asking for help. Then on the corporate side, I work with everything from healthcare professionals to engineering companies. Again, I work with all the major tech companies here and in the States. And, you know, you say tech companies, but you have people working in tech companies who are in HR. So it doesn't matter, it's like, just because they're in a tech company, it doesn't, they could be in any company. So again, it's not, I don't think it's specific to any age group, to any gender, to any industry. It's right across the board.
Which is great from a business point of view, but it's also scary from what we're talking about. Because you mentioned burnout being a word that was created for the healthcare profession back in the 70s, whatever, but now we are experiencing this at every level, which is kind of scary. What about you? Who comes to you, Fiona?
Well, it's interesting, because I ran a retreat this year in Crete, and I always, before I work with anyone, whether it's a group or one-to-one, I send out a sort of personal history form where I get a little bit of an idea of the person, not everything, but just some kind of idea of how I can help that person. And one question I never ask is, what's your profession? It's not on the form. And I'm not really that interested, to be honest, because it's not relevant. And with this amazing group of people that we had over in Crete, I honestly, it was only in the last day or something I started to learn what their work was, right? It just did not feature, because when you're really working on a deeper level, that isn't what it's about, because you can get so caught up in the identity of a person's job, what they do. And really, I was like, oh my God, is you? Wow! Like, it was really interesting. I was like, oh, I had no idea. But I knew so much about them in a very different way. And I think that's where we need to be. We need to look at each other without any kind of labels or even anything. It's just like, you're just a human being. So I suppose that, to answer your question, I work with human beings and I love them. I love the work that I do because it feels so humbling. It's just so humbling to be able to sit in a room with someone and to see the side of people, of a person that they are doing their best to hide from everybody else. So when someone comes into a therapy room, they feel vulnerable. They'll often, I have the amazing ability that people will cry within about 1 second of meeting me. And they're always so apologetic. And it's actually the blessing. I know that if that person's crying, it's a really good sign, because they're more in touch with their emotions. And I know I can help them. But there's shame there. They're afraid to show that part of themselves. And yet, that is like the gold, that's the joy, that's the part that we all need to see and we all need to bring out without shame, you know. And there's so much strength, I believe, in tears. You know, that's like, if you think about how intelligent the body is, it has a way of releasing, of letting go. Like when we cry, we're releasing. And yet, it's something that, you know, that feeling of pushing back, pushing back, pushing back. It's like, no, if you want to cry, if there's tears there, like, let them come. And let them keep coming until they don't need to come anymore.
That's really interesting. And I ask you something about retreat in a minute, because that's the beauty of your own podcast. Ask whatever you like, and I interviewed them.
I'm going to get revenge on you one day.
No, I interviewed a wonderful lady here in the audience yesterday, and she talked about her retreat, and I'm really curious about retreats, so I'm going to ask you about yours in a second. But this is a hard question to answer now, Siobhan. No, because it's one thing that you do the work with the individuals, with the corporate, both of you, and it's fantastic, and it's a business, and it's more than a business. It's between business and vocation. You do it because you love doing it, because you know you're making the difference. But if we were to make a real difference, and you'd be okay, you get the money that you need to pay your mortgage and everything else, you know, you don't need to do what you do every day. What would we need to do as a society to change this, burnout, to change this constant flow of clients coming to you looking for your help? What do we need to do? These people in here, what do we need to do as a group?
We need to take the wellness industry. We need to kick it on its head, turn it upside down, and go, this is a load of bollocks. Excuse me.
Elaborate, please.
So I really believe that, and you know, as I sit here, I'm part of the wellness industry, but I have this visual in my head of somebody sitting in an infinity pool in California, looking out over the California hills, and they invented the term, you know, well-being and the wellness industry, and they're sitting there going, ka-ching. And it's like the donkey chasing the carrot, that we are constantly chasing this work-life balance concept, which I think is what's causing this high level of stress and burnout and discontent with the world, because we will never have work-life balance. And, you know, I call it life balance, because it's all life. It's not broken into this pie chart of, well, here's my work, and here's my life, and, you know, here's this other bit. And if this bit doesn't work, then I'm a failure, because we're great at doing that, that going back into that thought of, I don't have it all perfectly aligned, as the wellness industry wants us to, you know. And then if we can flip that in its head and start talking about work-life balance as being life balance, it takes that pressure off us to have this perfect existence, which media and the interweb
I forgot what it's called now.
has contributed to, you know. And my other big bugbear, see, I'm getting my high horse now, is the term self-care.
I hear a round of applause in here, please.
I mean, like, seriously, stick it on a poster, rip it up and shuck it out, because not passionate about this, but I refer to self-care as care of self. So if we can get out of this mindset of, again, created by the wellness industry of, you know, what do you do for your self-care? Now, I know what you do for your self-care, so you're like, you've got your care of self way up there, because you bring it in every day. What do you do?
It's not your podcast.
But you incorporate your care of self into every day, and we've spoken about this before. But for a lot of us, and, you know, just normal people on our day-to-day, not knowing where to start, we go, okay, self-care, right, I need to up the game. Care of self is, it's too late in the day. We're playing catch-up, because we're already at a state of ill health. It's just sticking plaster over it, you know. Going to get here, we were talking about this on the way down. Women I've seen, I have friends who will say, yeah, I'm going to get my hair done on Saturday. Bit of self-care. Rather stick pins in my eyes than go and sit in hairdressers. It's not something that is self-care to me. But if we can flip the things that we associate with self-care into, like, these one-off, from these one-off things into care of self, something that we do every single day that's as ingrained in the habits as brushing your teeth in the morning, as having your breakfast, having a cup of tea, that we do it. And if we can even, and they don't have to be big things, if we can intersperse them throughout the day, then we've got care of self going constantly. We're lifting up our confidence, we're increasing our self-love without it being even a big thing. It just becomes part of who we are.
It's organic, and, yeah. And we do it, again, it's really helpful to think about how we do it for others and how naturally it comes. We don't say, oh, you know, I'm really going to practice caring for the kids this week. I'm gonna really try now, make sure that I feed them and get them out to school and get them the exercise. And, you know, it just spills out of us, right? Because it's natural. We love them. We want to look after them. But that's what we need to do for ourselves. That relationship has to be as strong for ourselves.
In both of your businesses, though, you have... You deal
Stop
with
using the word business. You make us sound like...
Okay. In both of your vocations...
That's better. That's
yeah.
Better.
In both of your... You know, you've been sent here to look after us. In your business... No, you do deal with a lot of... serious situations, right? Which is wonderful. And most, I'm assuming most people come on the other end better person or dealing with themselves in a different way. But what about you, Fiona? What do you do for yourself? Yeah. What's your
care of myself?
No, okay, just use the self-care. We just be
We can't. Are you serious? I'm going to drive home with Siobhan.
What do you do in terms of boundaries and looking after yourself and making sure that you are walking the walk, that's how I introduced you.
Yes, and thank you for that. I definitely do practice what I preach, because I think otherwise it's pure nonsense, to be honest, and I would not feel in any way able to go and help anyone else if I wasn't looking after myself. God, I have so many protocols. It's like, it's actually kind of embarrassing. I practice them all, starting in the morning. Like, I have a meditation, I have a journaling practice, I do a lot of yoga. I think one of my lovely yoga teachers is here this evening, Sheila. So there she is, my Sheila. So yoga, I feel, is a big part of releasing, especially when, as you say, you know, we're working with people who are going through a lot of trauma, pain, anxiety and stress, etc. So it has to be released from the body, and I know that, you know, I'm very aware of how important it is to actually consciously choose to let it go. So I think it's 60% of therapists burn out after 5 years. That's the statistic, right? So I've been doing one-to-one work for 10 years now, and I'm nowhere close to burning out. But I think that the reason that really is because I don't bring it home in terms of somewhere early on I knew, like, I can't bring this back, right? I can't bring back all of those issues to my own life. So there's I call it the golden cloak, you know, I'll put on a cloak that is my protective energy, and that's there for me. And so when I'm working with a client, I hold the space in that moment in time. So it's really coming from presence. It's coming from being there now at that moment. And then even just subtle little things like hearing the office door shut, right? Click, gone. And you have to do that. Because if you don't do that, well, then you're going to be in that 60% statistic. So yeah, I have my care of myself very, very high. I do NSDRs, non-sleep deep rest.
Don't know what that is.
Oh my God, brilliant, brilliant.
Tell us what it is.
It's basically a hypnotherapy or yoga nidra. The term NSDR was coined by Dr. Andrew Huberman, who is a Stanford neuroscientist. He's got a brilliant podcast called The Huberman Lab, if anyone has heard it, I definitely recommend it. I've learned so much from him. But I was doing NSDRs before I even knew I was doing NSDRs. And it's when our brain, basically it's like a nap. We could call it a fancy nap, but I do it pretty much every day, certainly after clients, I'll do it. And it is a way of cleansing the body, but also reprogramming the mind. So neuroplasticity, and I listen to hypnotherapies, and that I would say is the thing that has really elevated my mental health from being good to being really strong, like really positive. Dare I say it?
Wonderful. So my favourite son and my favourite daughter are both here tonight. And when I was listening to Fiona saying about journaling, meditation and yoga, those absolutely, that makes a lot of sense. They're going, no chance. I'm not doing any of that stuff. What can we do if you don't need, you know, if somebody wants to come to you, say, look, I need to get going, but I'm not into meditation. Sheila, yoga teacher, forget about it, I'm not interested. Whatever. Yeah, what can we do?
Have a speech to our class.
Because that is the problem sometimes, isn't it? That we go on, and I have a client that says, oh really, I don't have to do all these things? I say, no, you don't have to do all of these things. Do whatever you really want to do. But what can we do?
So, in an ideal world, we all want to channel our inner Fiona. And we want to be having our naps. But realistically, we do. But if we're just starting out with it's raining a bank.
No, but that is important.
No, because you have to start somewhere.
Yeah, but I do, okay, I do think that people will say, I don't have time, right?
Oh,
but I have a big one saying, you make time, you take time, because no one is going to give it to you.
Yeah. It's the one thing that we will never get back, and it's the one thing that's slipping away. So everything else we could talk about that's slipping away and that we don't have, but there's one thing we're in control of, the only thing we're in control of is our breath, and the one thing that we lose every second is time. So I totally agree. But what I do, what I get for anyone who is going, oh, mindfulness, Jesus. Yeah, tried it, don't like it. Yeah, couldn't get my head to sit still. Yeah, brain was gone. But mindfulness is not, it's not just, and it goes back to the wellness industry and us thinking that the only way to do mindfulness is to listen to something on an app. And we must download the app and we have to have 20 minutes and we have to do all these things. And then we're thinking about the shopping list and it going back into all of that. And what I do is, and remember I said, I don't drink anymore. I also don't do drugs. So when I tell you this, this comes from a place of utter sanity. It is.
Sorry, no, it's just comfort.
And this is a great one for even younger people to maybe get their head around, to start to get them to really embrace, but this is for everybody, to embrace being present, because that's all mindfulness is. It's being present in the here and now. If you like cooking, if you like baking, if you like sport, if you like golfing, when you're taking a shot of the ball into the hole with the stick, that's mindfulness. Johnny Sexton, when he's making that kick, that's mindfulness. You know, that is, we don't need an app. But what I did when I was training in mindfulness, there was one exercise we had to do, and this is where it really turned me off. We had to walk around a room about the size of here, there's about 20 of us in a room, no windows, for an hour, as slowly as possible. And I thought, okay, this is where I'm actually, I'm losing the will to live. This is never happening. She loved that. I'm like, whoa, no. So what I do, from the minute I get up in the morning, I will take, during the day, I will try really hard, if I have time, to get a good walk, as I call it, my good walk, an hour's walk or an hour and a half. But if I don't, I, throughout the course of the day, will do 5 or 10 minute walks. I could do 10 of them, because I've got that little short period of time. And in those walks, and I don't do it on every single one, but I'll do it on a couple. Okay, now this is where you have to bear with me. I created my purple alien. So my purple alien lives in the sky. And this little guy...
Remember, no drugs, no alcohol.
Totally sober. this little guy can't see down here on Earth, but he just thinks this world is fascinating. And the more that I can see, hear and smell and convey to him in my head, the happier he gets. So for 5 minutes of at least one of my walks during the day, I don't have my phone with me, and I will just, in my head, I'll be going, oh, there's the colour of the leaves that got changed since yesterday. There's a bin there, that's ugly. There's a nice wreath on someone's door, the kids are playing. It doesn't matter, it doesn't need to be pretty. It can be walking in a concrete jungle, it can be walking in down by the sea, it can be in a park. It's not about, oh, I can't do that, there's nothing nice around where I am to look at. It is about being fully present. And the happier my little purple alien gets, the more present I am. Because I'm not thinking about what I've got to cook, what I've got to pick up, what I have to call, bills, nothing. For those 5 minutes. Now, if you can start doing that, then we can all get to be Fiona.
It's so true, though. I think it's brilliant. And there is science to back this up. And it is a study done in 2010. It was actually called, it sounds like the title of a self-help book, but this was an academic paper. And it was called A Wandering Mind is an Unhappy Mind. And they basically, what they did was it was just when the smartphone had just come out. You know, remember in 2010, we were all getting our smartphones. Like, oh my God, it's amazing. But what they did was they texted people at random points during the day and asked them what they were doing and what if they were happy and where their mind was, right? And what they discovered was that most people, their happiness had very, very little to do with what they were actually doing, and it was where their mind was. If their mind was in the past, in the future, in the past. And one of the times that they were very happy was making love. Now, the researcher said, what the hell were they doing answering the phone? I'm not really sure about that, but it was like a novelty back then, maybe. I don't know.
Fair enough. That's great.
Sex was a novelty.
Just a couple of things before I give the microphone to the audience. I was talking to some people at the interval, and I said, oh, I might like to have you on the podcast one of these days live, and they were like, no chance, you're not having me there. Whether it's an anxiety or self-confidence or whatever. But you both talked about self-confidence, both in your books and stuff, and it's a big thing, and there's a great passage in your book, Siobhan, about self-confidence, and the way sometimes we get distracted, we believe self-esteem and self-confidence are big. Tell us a bit more about it, because I think it's a really important point to talk about, and I'm sure it's something that leads to the burnout, leads to the things you work on.
I describe it as self-esteem is on the inside and self-confidence is on the outside. So if you think back, when I'm trying to explain this, even to when like the 17-year-old is over with his pals and they're all rugby players and just talking about that confidence, and you know, even at that age with teenagers, but for all of us, is if you remember back to when you first started to drive, learning to drive, and the very first time you get in a car, and you think, oh dear God, like this moving piece of metal, I'm just never going to be able to do this. So when the very first time you sit in the car, you have no self-esteem. So your belief system inside of your ability to drive the car isn't, you don't have it. You also have no confidence because you've never driven a car. So unless you're coming from a place of massive ego, the average way of thinking will be, I'm just not going to be able, my physical capabilities, because I've never done it before, I don't have the confidence to do this. So you go in your driving lesson, second time you get in the car, that self-esteem is starting to increase and your self-confidence is starting to increase. So by the time you've done 4 or 5 driving lessons, your self-esteem, your belief, because you haven't crashed the car, you're doing great.
What about if you failed your test 5 times?
We get to that.
Then you write a book about how to pass it.
Then you write a book on how to pass your driving test. But your confidence, your ability, your physical ability to do it. So it's the physical ability and then the emotional ability. And that's the difference. So then you pass your driving test and you have just a small accident, just bang on the back of the car. So your confidence, your ability to drive the car is still the same. But what can take a knock is your belief, your that self-esteem, that inner bit of, I don't trust myself, I'm not good enough. So when people say, I need to build up my confidence, chances are your confidence, your ability to do whatever you think you can't do, you can do, but it's how you perceive, it's that belief, it's that self-esteem. And so that's, we need to always, it's working, it's like the turtle, it's the inner bit, not the hard shell. We need to work, and it, you know, it's just reiterating what Fiona's been saying, all evening, it's from the inside out, not the outside in. We can drive the car, but if you're driving the car and your self-esteem is on the floor, you're actually going to be gobbled up with anxiety because you're going to be going, I'm driving the car, I'm going to crash the car, oh my God, because that's what happened the last time. So, but if you work on that self-esteem to bring that back up and make
which is why we're so often, like, our self-esteem is knocked when we do anything new, right?
Yes.
So anytime when you're talking about writing your first book, you're going to feel that sense of imposter syndrome. This is shite, no one's going to like it. But it's because you've never done it before. And I think that's really important to always to remember, like when you're doing something for the first time, like just please give yourself the patience and the love that you deserve to see that through. You're going to feel that fear, you know, it's going to feel uncomfortable, but it doesn't mean, that uncomfortable feeling does not mean don't do it. If anything, I would say it means the opposite. It means this is right. You've got to do this because it means something to you.
Thanks very much. You know, it's really important because that self-worth versus what we believe other people think of us and all of that is really important. And as I say, you elaborated very well in the book, and it's great because it's really confusing at times. You know,
yeah.
We just go, okay, I can't drive the car, but.
But also, and just on that, you know, what other people think of us. And I when I gave up drinking, it's funny, what I used to do when I drank is at 6 o'clock, myself and Chardonnay would hang out in the kitchen with a wine glass. The two of us, we had great chats. And so when the 1st of November came 15 years ago, I would pour a diet 7-Up into my wine glass. And I did that for a month. And then it was like the placebo effect. The reason I was saying this, my brain was, I was going off on a different tangent there, was because I never did AA. And I don't have anything against it. But there is an amazing saying in AA, which is, what other people think of you is none of your business.
Mm-hmm.
And we do get so caught up of that fear factor of doing something new because what will other people think of me or what will they say? And actually, like, honestly, people are so self-absorbed with themselves.
That's what my mum always says. She's like, no one's looking.
They don't care.
Yeah. Or to be independent of the good opinion of others. That's even better. Like, wow, power to us. If we can be independent of either good or bad opinion, then we're all VIPs then.
Fiona's book is called There's two of them there. So I'd like to give you the word to be either Pete or Isabella. I don't know who's going around with the microphone, but if you have a question, and I hope you do have one or two, please raise your hand, and there's Nicola at the back there, and wait until you get the microphone and make sure it works and ask a question. Tell us who the question is for, please.
It's for everyone.